Justin Watkins will be in at 5 o'clock, so we'll get into pros versus Joes and some other legal stories, especially around the world of college football. Alex White is here. James is here. Alexandra, what's going on?
Like being back in studio. It's been a while. We've been at Battleborn. Not that I don't love that studio, because it is very well
done. How dare you?
And very pretty, but it's cool to be here. We got James in the room with us, and yeah, we got a lot to talk about, too.
What's it been like down at South Point in terms of crowds and the sports book and all that, with all this good stuff going on in the month of November?
A lot of good stuff. It's been pretty busy. The weekends really fill up with college footballs on Saturday and Sundays. You got to get there early for the NFL games, definitely. But
tell people where they can find your stuff up on socials.
Socials, so Sports by the Book, Sports by the Book LV on Instagram, my personal Alex White with two E's, or Alex White Sports. So thank you for that.
We are going to talk a little hockey with RTHG. He's part of Cofield and Company on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, depending on the VGK schedule. So he's coming up in less than 15. But we had the CFP release last night, another week of rankings. I realize it's a TV show, but I will buy in. I will get worked up over things. I get worked up over people getting worked up, because I know it'll play itself out. But I'm also already starting to hear the whispers on the back end of this thing. More thoughts like, hey, why do we need the little guy? You need the little guy. So I'll explain that in a little bit. But the other thing swirling around college football, aside from these last 3 weeks of games, are the openings on the coaching carousel. Jimmy Franklin just took VTech. It seems like Florida and LSU are the big prizes out there. Lane Kiffin would seem to be the number one target of both. And Dan Wolken, who's awesome, he's now with USA. Check that. He's with Yahoo. After being at USA Today forever, we actually have a couple of Dan takes here. Dan Wolken and Dan Wetzel. Dan W. takes. First one. If Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss in the next couple weeks, could the CFP committee snub the Rebels from the playoffs? According to their protocol, they could. And the Florida State precedent looms large. You remember Florida State lost its quarterback? I mean, if you lose your coach, about as big as losing your quarterback, right? That would be one of the biggest hoots I've ever seen. The entire SEC would roll over in its grave, and they're not dead. They'd be really loud.
Very loud. I don't know if they could actually do that, right? But
I think the CFP might do it. I think they would do it with if they – well, I mean, let's use this year's example. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
There could be three or four teams jockeying for that group of six lone bid. What if two of the three teams had their coach leaving?
Jeez.
Very likely.
Yeah.
Right? What if Tulane is in the mix and John Sumrall is on his way somewhere else? He's already announced it. What if Dan Mullen and UNLV are in the mix and Mullen has already announced, I'm moving on, or San Diego State is the team out of the Mountain West Conference, and Sean Lewis has already gone somewhere, or Boise makes it, and Spencer Danielson, I think they're a long shot at this point, but you get my point.
Well, and when you compare it to a team like Tulane, you could definitely see the College Football Playoff Committee keeping Tulane out, so then you got to think of it the same way with a big school like Ole Miss, right? You got to treat them the same.
You should.
Too, yeah.
But it's the vaunted SEC, and they're I think they're afraid to do anything that would piss off the SEC. I don't think they're afraid to piss off the Big Ten. And in fact, I think there's some scenarios we'll talk about that the Big Ten is going to have a case and be like, wait, SEC gets the benefit of a fourth and fifth look, and, you know, we didn't. But again, Lane Kiffin, if he's going to take the Florida or Ole Miss job, he's going to have to leave. If you're an employer giving Lane Kiffin at LSU or Florida $15 to $20 million a year with what I propose is a $100 million fire me bonus or buyout, you're going to ask them, like, you can't start the job on Jan 10. You're going to ask them to leave? Start the job now? Or does he have that much power that he could actually hold it over their heads and be like, well, you know what, LSU is being more forgiving, so I'll take LSU over Florida. Screw off.
They're treating it as if he has that much power. The word on the street is he is the only real coach available, right, for one of those two top-end positions.
Which is crazy. There's so many good coaches available at, you know, lateral move. Well, not lateral, but, you know, slight bump up. Guys who are a level below. Guys who are out of coaching right now.
Yeah. Guys who have done an incredible job at, like you said, not lateral, smaller schools, right? And given them the opportunity with the resources that they would have at LSU or Florida, I think could do tremendous jobs.
Another great question on this coaching search hire deal that we're all watching with Lane Kiffin, Florida or LSU. I still think Okie State and Arkansas should get involved and make that offer of $18 million a year and $100 million buyout. Dan Wetzel says, no matter how coveted the LSU or Florida jobs may be, does Lane Kiffin want to be forever known as the coach who quit on his playoff-bound team? I think that answer is really easy.
I think that answer is easy, too. I think it's a no. Does not want to be known as that guy.
Oh, I think it's, does he want to be known? No. Will he accept being known as that guy? 100% yes.
Gosh, I hate that.
Why do you hate it?
Because, I mean, this is a team that is believing in him and has gotten so much better in the last couple of years and had a quarterback change this year, and Trinidad has been awesome, and they're 10-1 right now. And then for him just to leave, and that's kind of the state we're in with college football, it's terrible. I hate it.
Aren't the kids adults now, though? Don't we treat them differently? That's what I was told this last offseason. Like, hell, if FOIA requests come through, you know, Freedom of Information Act requests come through, and in the coming years we get the entire payroll for football on these state schools, and people are just slaughtering them, right? Like, how much is that quarterback making? We have four wins. Annihilating them, right? And I know what'll be said. These kids are adults. They're taking money. It's a job. Well, they're already adults. They're already making the money. They move all the time. Now I'm going to actually turn the tables on the kids, and I almost never do this. And Chambliss is not a great example because he came up from Ferris State. But kids are looking all the time. They're moving all the time. Hell, we had the news yesterday. Sam Levitt's reps might be shopping him. Arizona State just might not have the money, might not stay around. If they're adults, then they can deal with this. Hey, sorry, you moved. Lane Kiffin's got the same opportunities.
We act like Lane Kiffin's not making good money right now at Ole Miss, and that he's dying. He needs to get a little extra pay raise here. He's, you know, not being treated well there.
Well, I don't think he has everything he wants. He does get frustrated that he believes the SEC treats them like a mid-tier or bottom-tier school in the SEC, and they never get night games. There is a lot of, believe it or not, pitching and begging he has to do to get crowds out there. Like, they have good crowds. They don't sell out all the time. I know in the past he's had a pitch like, hey, stay around for the end of the game. He's done that many times. So there could be some frustrations. They're a top 30 program. I don't know if they're legitimately a top 10 program. He made them a top 10 program. Can I give you the other reason to answer Wetzel's query? And let me read it again. Does Lane Kiffin want to be forever known as a coach who quit on his playoff-bound team? Do you think Lane Kiffin cares what anyone thinks of him? Have we not seen what he's done in the past?
Yeah. Yeah, he's not afraid. He likes to troll.
I mean, the whole Tennessee to USC thing, I mean, he's like, he was hated forever, and it's like, he can never be trusted again. Now everyone loves him.
Yeah.
People forget.
But he's, like, worked on that, right? And becoming loved again. I think so.
I mean, he makes weird comments about gambling and the end of games, and
yeah,
he's the one who went after the exalted, untouchable Nick Saban many times. He doesn't care. I don't think that's going to factor into his decision at all. And I'm not saying he doesn't care about the kids that he's coaching right now. But, you know, your reputation is going to be stained forever. Forever in 2025 means what, 3 days?
Yeah.
Our attention span is so short, no one cares.
That's very true.
Coming up this Friday, we're back with the Dollar Loan Center Picks Contest. $100 up for grabs. We have you pick three games straight up for the upcoming NFL weekend. That'll go down at 3:30 on Cofield & Company. 3:30, you get all three correct, and you can win the money. It's the Cofield & Company Company Weekly Football Pick Contest, brought to you by Dollar Loan Center.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, we got Ryan Wallace in studio with us here with Alex and Cofield. What's going on?
Not too much. The Golden Knights won, so everything's right with the world.
It's good for today, right?
Yeah.
What do you got coming up on the show today?
We're going to dig into last night's game, obviously, get into what they did well where their game's been building. Generally, we get Brian McCormick, the voice of the Henderson Silver Knights, on a Wednesday. It's good to have him on, considering you've got contributions from Braden Bowman. Some of the Silver Knights really showing well, and you know, obviously, we can get into some other things, Trevor Connolly, Carter Hart, all of that stuff.
Well, let's talk about Bowman, because it's made a big difference, and obviously last night was really big. Set up the game winner last night.
So, you know, I think for me with Braden Bowman, what he's done really well is he's come in and he's played his game. So often when you have a player that is trying to break into the National Hockey League or at least get recognized on that level, they'll get their chance and they'll change their game. The reason that he is up here is because he's decisive with the puck. He has great instincts in terms of the power play. And what you saw out of Braden Bowman was picking a seam to get the puck up to Mitch Marner and then a really strong, heady play on the puck to get that goal to go in for the Golden Knights. So on the power play, he's been a difference maker. 5-on-5 with Jack Eichel has been able to pull pucks off the wall, get Jack in space, and that's what you're there for. He's not a direct comparable to Mark Stone, but he does a lot of the things Mark Stone does well in order to help this team succeed.
What's his background?
So he's undrafted. Right, like he was undrafted, and it was kind of a weird situation because, you know, during COVID, his season did not get going. He wasn't able to play hockey in his draft year, so you had to put in the work. You're able to get here to the Henderson Silver Knights. You sign an AHL deal last year. You turn that into a two-way deal, and now you're playing in the National Hockey League. It has really only been about a calendar year for Braden Bowman where he's been playing professional hockey here, but he's done everything right to get noticed, and now he's making a difference.
The other wacky story is Hutton, who obviously was a big player, you know, in the determining the win in the game last night. His story is incredible. Like, I kept looking. I'm like, wait, he's played how many games in the last 5 years?
It's not very many. All of 11 games last year for the Golden Knights. And you have to kind of recognize, right, like Alex Pietrangelo was healthy last year. This is a team that has had a pretty defined defensive core for a while now, but you bring in a guy like Hutton a couple of years ago to just help you in those moments where injuries crop up, because he's incredibly responsible. He can come in, he can give you solid minutes, and his attitude's phenomenal. Like, it is not an easy thing to sit on the bench and not play games. And then so often with Ben Hutton, he's been asked to come in and play hard minutes against guys like Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and every time he's come in, he's been impactful.
Let's talk about Carter Hart. You brought him up down with the Silver Knights right now.
Sure.
How has it been going for him?
So he played his first game over the weekend. He stopped 12 of 14 shots, got the win. So, you know, his first game in just about 22 months. I don't know that you're going to be able to pull too much out of the first start, right? Like, it's going to be a process with Carter Hart because so much of the goaltending position relies on the reads and in the trenches type of play. You can try to replicate it as much as you want to in practice, but those scrambles that happen in real time, it's just something you have to get used to again. So in terms of debuts or just in terms of kind of getting that first game under his belt, I think it's probably what you would have wanted. Maybe you want more shots just to get some more rhythm and see more things, but you know, for Carter Hart, it's a win, and it's, you know, your first win in a while, so he'll take it.
Is there a timeline that we have for Aiden Hill?
No. No, there's okay. No timeline. So week to week is the official designation on Aiden Hill. It's lower body. It appeared to be non-contact when it happened, right? So generally those are going to be on the longer side of week to week. Week to week could literally mean 4 weeks. It can mean 8 weeks. It can mean 12 weeks. And I think, you know, if I had to guess, and I'm just guessing here, not speculating, but just guessing, I think you're probably looking at least another 3 to 4, maybe 4 to 5 weeks before Aiden Hill's ready to go.
Ryan the Hockey Guy, of course, host of the VGK Insider Show over on our sister station, Fox 1340 and 98.9 FM. I got the call letters right. I got the stations right. I just almost blanked there for a second. You know, the funny thing was last week I had on an old shirt. A wise guy shirt. It was a show I did on Fox 1460 back in like 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that stuck in my head. I'm like, let me get all the stations right. We've got a lot of stations here. It is our hockey station. It's a great station. And Darren Millard and RTHC do a really good job over there. Okay, we just talked about Carter Hart and Aiden Hill and the goaltending situation.
Yep.
And all right, Schmid last night didn't face a ton of shots, but I know he had at least one big save that you know, came right before one of the big goals, but
sure.
17 stops, and he's been good.
Well, I mean, you look at the Golden Knights, they've got 9 wins total. Akira Schmid's got 8 of them. right? Like, he has taken advantage of the opportunity and he's run with it. Now, it started last year, end of the year. He was called up, played some important games for the Golden Knights and got wins. Now you look at what he did last night, and this is coming on the heels of, you know, Akira Schmid allowing a shorthanded goal in overtime, the final game against the Islanders on the homestand. And there was, I don't want to say, there was a challenge by Bruce Cassidy to go out and get us the extra save. And last night, that's what it was. The Golden Knights had a 2-1 lead in the third period with a power play, and it's a 2-on-1 breakdown the other way for Will Cooley of the Rangers, and Schmid makes the save. And then 35 seconds later, you go down, Shea Theodore scores a power play goal. It's the insurance marker that you need. Those are the differences between wins and losses. And Akira Schmid, as you mentioned, didn't have a lot of work to do, but the meaningful play, he's the goaltender that made it. It wasn't Igor Shesterkin. It was Akira Schmid. And in the wins, he's been doing that for Vegas.
I saw some of your tweets last night about Shesterkin mm-hmm. and some of the saves he made. These are the kind of games you walk away from and you're like, whew. Like, you're going against one of the best. You get a win out of that?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. And the other thing is, what's the weird balance here with the Rangers on the road who came in, were they like 9-1-1 on the road?
Yeah,
and they're like a 500 team overall. What the hell's going on in MSG?
Yeah, I mean, they're 1-7-1 at home, Madison Square Garden. I think the number is 5 shutout losses on home ice.
Wow.
So they don't score.
Yeah, it was a crazy streak that we were following. We're like, where are they going to score?
Did you jump on it?
Taking some unders there, yeah, definitely. There when you have Shesterkin in net, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's always a good play there when it comes to the Rangers. But, like, their offense has just been sporadic. And so the goaltending's been fine. Like, Jonathan Quick's numbers are even better than Igor Shesterkin's. Now, Quick doesn't play as much, obviously, but both goaltenders have been phenomenal for the Rangers this season. When they lose, they can't score. That's what it boils down to. They just cannot give any run support in the games that they lose. And that's traditionally for them happened at home, on home ice.
I want to ask you about two teams in the Pacific Division who are kind of off to hot starts and which one you think is sustainable mm-hmm. with the Anaheim Ducks and then the Seattle Kraken.
So I am notoriously not a believer in the Seattle Kraken. Listen, I think it's been a great start for them. I just, their level of like star player, like Matty Beniers, like I don't buy it for a full season, right? Like, I think they've got good players. I think they're well coached. It's been a good start. Joey Decord's a really good goalie. I just don't buy their star players being able to sustain a high level of play over 82 games. With Anaheim, it's a little bit different. I buy the Anaheim Ducks. I believe in the Anaheim Ducks. Coaching matters. Joel Quenneville, he's a really good coach. But star power means something in this league. Leo Carlson, he's a star. Mason McTavish, he's a star. Cutter Gauthier, he's a star. There's so much young talent, and I haven't even gotten to Jackson Lacombe on the back end. I haven't even gotten to, Lukas Dostal in net. Like, they have stars at every position, and that's what you need to be successful. I believe in the Anaheim Ducks.
I have another question going back to the Silver Knights, because you brought up Connolly, and I mm-hmm. saw that him and another player, franchise record, scoring goals in a matter of seconds. Scored their goals only 9 seconds apart, making it the shortest amount of time between goals.
Yeah, I can tell you, Trevor Connolly, like, this is a young player, right, who's kind of dealt with some injuries over the course of the last couple of years. You were able to take your time getting him back into the fold for Henderson this year, coming off of an injury that was sustained over the summer, and he looks faster. He's always been assertive with the puck. He's a really dynamic player, and he can shoot, right? So for Connolly, his first couple of games back with Henderson, a goal, 2 assists, 3 points, dynamic stuff for him. And now the challenge for Connolly is A, staying healthy, right? B, getting stronger, getting more adapted to a professional game while continuing to build your skills.
Ryan Wallace is with us. Mammoth, 2 out of the next 3
mm-hmm.
on the road?
Yeah.
It's a weird quirk, is it not?
Yeah, well, because they're going Utah, Anaheim, Utah. Like, why not? I don't understand why you don't just stay for 2 games against the Utah Mammoth, but it is a weird kind of quirk to the schedule for the Golden Knights. You got Utah tomorrow. That's a interesting team for a number of reasons. They can score, but they're having trouble keeping the puck out of their own net. They are losing leads late in games. It's happened to them the last couple of times. So I think it's a good opportunity for the Golden Knights to go back on the road. You beat Utah, and then it's another showdown for first place with the Anaheim Ducks. Didn't think I'd be saying that this year.
Where's the Sharks rivalry now that they're actually decent again? Or is there a chance Utah could take over on the hateometer? I don't like Utah. So anytime there's a chance to have a rivalry with the nice people of Utah, as we know, not always nice in sports, or they can be kind of mean.
Well, I'll tell you, like, I know a lot of people are going to say it's the Utah Mammoth, not the Arizona Coyotes, but it's the Arizona Coyotes. Like, we can all recognize that. There was some bad blood between the Golden Knights and Arizona a couple of years ago because Vegas was up like 8-5 in a game, and then they ended up losing the game. Like, it was one of those things where they just could not put away the Arizona Coyotes. So it's got potential, but I don't think Utah is going to overtake it. I do think there's opportunity for San Jose to kind of reintroduce themselves into the rivalry. For that to happen, they'll actually have to win some games. Yeah. They haven't been able to do that against the Golden Knights. So when it's one-sided, it's just kind of like, okay, little brother, go over there. I mean, the rivalry for me with Vegas is Colorado. It's been Colorado since they've come into the league. Outside of San Jose the first couple of years when the Sharks were actually good, I think that if you look at the two powerhouses of this conference, it's been Vegas, it's been Colorado. They've met in the playoffs. They don't like each other particularly much. I think that's the rivalry.
Yeah, when you're good, you don't need to punch down. And that's not an insult to the,
yeah, you know, for sure.
Your goal is to beat the team that's right with you or right above you.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, Ryan, you're up at 4 o'clock over on Fox 1340 and 98.9 FM. Tomorrow, game time and then pregame?
Yeah, so pregame will go at 5 o'clock. Game will be at 6 o'clock, and then the extended postgame show will be about a half an hour after the game, and that's where everyone can call in and yell at me. It's awesome.
Ah, there you go. All right, there he is, Ryan Wallace. Let's do a giveaway right now. 364-1100, caller 7 for UNLV and Hawaii tickets. We told you at the beginning of the week we're giving away tickets for the Ninth Island Showdown all week long, at least until Thursday. Right now is your chance, first chance this show. Caller 7, 364-1100, UNLVtickets.com to go to the game on Friday night. But James is going to hook you up right now with a pair of tickets for the Rebels and the Rainbow Warriors.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Nice job there by Ryan Wallace. Again, he goes live. That's our hockey station over on 1340 and 98.9 FM. VGK Insider Show. He's up in about 29 minutes. So if you want to hear 2 hours of hockey talk, turn us off now. No, you don't have to do it now. Stick around for at least a half an hour, but those guys do a great job. They're super tight with the organization as well. All right, college football playoff rankings are out. Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, Texas A&M 3, Georgia 4, Texas Tech 5. Any issues?
No issues there.
I have a big issue with Texas A&M. I'm not sure they're even a top 10 team. Seriously.
Well,
They have a win over Notre Dame. Again, I will mention 5,000 times they held on the final play, on the game-scoring play, so I discount that to a certain extent. But they hung with a team that I think is actually a top 5 team. Texas A&M is also the Indiana of this year because they, in the SEC, really haven't played the best teams.
I think they have played a lot of good teams, though. Kind of going through their schedule right now. Yeah, I guess you're right. Bottom of the SEC, but I think they've done it impressively. Like, I really do. The Mississippi State, that is when they were playing their best and wasn't even really competitive. And, I mean, they took other teams to overtime, including Texas. So that kind of shows you where A&M is right now. We'll find out. I mean, they almost lost last week, but they dug themselves out of a pretty deep hole. So,
Georgia A&M SEC title game. What's the number? Georgia by at least a touchdown?
Depends.
You think it's like 4?
Yeah.
What? Really? Okay. Texas Tech, Texas A&M on a neutral.
It depends. I know Chris Andrews, sportsbook director at Southbourne, he has Texas Tech above A&M, but I do not. So he would probably have a pick.
Ole Miss 6, Oklahoma 8, Alabama 10, Vandy 14, Texas 17. 7 teams on the top 17. They're lining up an opportunity for Vandy to steal a bid. Texas needs a lot to happen. But, hell, if they upset Texas A&M, I'm sure they could find a way with the brand to jump them up 10 spots if they wanted to.
Jeez.
To me, 5 teams from the SEC in the top 12 is ridiculous, especially when I keep hearing the narrative that if Oregon loses to USC, Oregon's out, and it doesn't even mean that USC's in. Why is the SEC one of the big power conferences held in such high regard, the Big Ten not so much?
That'll be very interesting to see what they do, because if USC does beat Oregon, but the weird thing is Bama, they dropped them 6, and I don't know if that was just, I don't know, to get Oklahoma in there, but I thought that was kind of extreme. They lost by 2. They beat Oklahoma in the box score. I mean, outgained them in yards per play. They lost the turnover margin. So I thought that was really extreme. So you're right. If they follow suit, they'll do the same thing to Oregon and might knock them out of it. And doesn't necessarily mean
they will find a way to get the SEC. They'll drop them down 4 or 5 spots, but they'll still be in the mix. Alabama's in.
What is with their against the Big Ten this year? It's always
I think a lot of it's the West Coast thing. I think Pacific time zones and Mountain time zone teams are out of sight, out of mind. I don't think they watch enough of the games. And here's the thing. They're both playing day games all the time now, or earlier games, because I got to freaking cross over against the Big Ten and go to the middle of the country. So you figured that would have solved it. But I keep hearing USC soft, Oregon soft. Like, what do you mean soft? They're both elite run games. They both have great quarterbacks. Jaden Maiva has played like a top 10 quarterback. We know about Dante Moore. I don't understand the disrespect. They can't play defense. They can play defense.
Go back and watch the USC-Michigan game, because USC dominated in the trenches against Michigan. So that really impressed me. I have USC, I think 13th or 14th in my power ratings. So I'm shocked. You bring up the West Coast, but what about – I'm shocked with the Big 12 love right now with BYU and Utah even being that high.
I want to build on that. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. One more thing on Alabama. Now, if you notice, Miami has jumped forward over teams off a bye week. Should teams be able to jump Alabama, considering Alabama's playing Eastern Illinois? Should they not be penalized? Like, what are you going to show us against Eastern Illinois? You're dropping.
It's a valid point.
Standard. You need to, I have no idea what that line will be, but you need to beat them by 45 points or you're moving down from 10. If you want to play this stupidity, this game with us, with the dumb schedule late in the year, then it costs you. Now, that all said, this is the way I look at it, and this is the way I'm going to approach it the rest of the show. I am basing it on who I think can win these games, what the lines would be. I do think Alabama is a top 12 team in the country, but this is a lot of respect for Alabama, and I'm feeling a lot of disrespect for Oregon, and frankly, I don't get it. On to the NFL next. We'll talk to Miles Simmons. Biggest game of the week, all these glamour matchups, important playoff table setters, the Raiders and the Browns in Las Vegas because of Shador. Yes, that's true.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's get into the NFL. Miles Simmons joins us every Wednesday here on Cofield and Company. Alexandra White is here as the company. It's Cofield. You know, the last time I saw someone tweet something as simple as, let's not be weird about this, I think it was something in regard to Caitlin Clark. That might have been on the heels of Greg Doyle being kind of weird in Indy. Well, Miles has pulled it off because well, Miles, Shador Sanders is here. He's going to start. He's coming to Vegas. And you tweeted out, let's not be weird about this, please.
I did. I know that that's not going to happen, Steve. I mean, it's just inevitable because that's how people have been about Shador Sanders, you know, going back to when he was in Colorado, really. I mean, I don't really understand why Shador Sanders is kind of like new age Tim Tebow in that you can't talk about him just and his performance without being extraordinarily weird. But that's kind of what this has become. And, you know, I don't mean that as an insult to Shador Sanders when I say it's like Tim Tebow, because I'm not saying he's a quarterback like Tim Tebow, because I think that Shador Sanders is a better quarterback than Tim Tebow, and that's not a very high bar to clear. I understand that. But it's just this strange effect that he seems to have on people, and I don't know if it's because he's Deion Sanders' son or because he's a little bit gregarious or because he is talented but probably a little bit raw and people want him to be maybe further along in his career than he really is. I don't really get it, but people are going to be weird about this, just like they've been weird about how, oh my gosh, How could he not have taken any snaps with the first team offense? I mean, he's the fifth round freaking quarterback. Like that. This is also why you don't draft two mid round quarterbacks, by the way, which I said probably on this show, you know, in April or May, right after it happened. But it's just this strange, strange thing that he is a lightning rod, and it's not necessarily his fault, but he just is. And so people are going to be weird about this, but I will at least try not to be, and I don't think that I will be.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's the whole Team Sanders thing because, you know, Deion was a very debatable choice at the highest level at Colorado, and people kind of drew battle lines. So I think if you teamed up with Deion Sanders and you teamed up with Shador, but you're right, I see people get really emotional over it. I'm not asking you to confirm this, but like some of the stuff around the draft with Josina Anderson and Shador, I was like, what is she doing? Mel Kiper. I mean, Mel's crazy, but Mel, my God, you're the one who created the narrative, essentially. He's one of them that created the narrative that he was a top quarterback available in the draft. He just wasn't. Everyone was telling you he wasn't.
Yes.
But now we're whatever we are now, 11 game, what are we at, week 12. 12 weeks into the season, and those people are not going to back down. They want to see the completion of what Shador is, and they want to see that pound of flesh if Shador actually is good and the entire league blew it.
Right, and the dumbest thing to me, though, is when people are like, oh, Kevin Stefanski doesn't want Shador Sanders to do well. What kind of BS is that? Because if Shador Sanders sucks, then it's another reason for Kevin Stefanski to lose his damn job. So, like, I don't understand, like, where that comes from. You know, obviously, they thought more of Dylan Gabriel than they thought of Shador Sanders. I mean, they drafted Dylan Gabriel, right, within the top 100, which was a ridiculous draft pick at the time, and I said it, fine. But then they went up, and then they had to trade up to draft Shador Sanders, and it's not like you draft somebody for no reason, right? They did split up the field so that people would, the young quarterbacks would get extra reps in OTAs and then in training camp. So it's not like they've done nothing to help prepare Shador Sanders. But at the same time, when camp opened, this was the fourth string quarterback, right? He got promoted to third string by virtue of the Browns trading Kenny Pickett to the Raiders, right? Because AOC got hurt, fine. And then you had Joe Flacco, who was starting the first four games. And then he gets traded to the Cincinnati Bengals. And then Shador Sanders, by virtue of that, gets moved up to backup. So by the time we are into the season and it's, oh, Shador Sanders is the backup quarterback, there is no time for him to get starters reps. And so that's why everybody that's saying this stuff and they're, oh my gosh, how could he not have any reps with the ones? Like, where would they come from? You know, there are mandates for how much teams can practice, right? So it's not like there's just unlimited time. And, you know, the Browns are, you know, BSing around and doing nothing and not giving Shador Sanders reps. Man, that's not what happened. If you have two mid-round quarterbacks and you draft one in the third round, you think higher of that guy. So you prepare that guy to be the starter first. And then he was the starter first. And now he's in concussion protocol. And we'll see if Shador Sanders does enough to Wally Pip him. I don't know that he will. But maybe, you know, going against the Raiders, he might look good. We'll see. I don't know. But it's just, we don't have to be weird about this, guys. It's just football. If you want to be, if you want to criticize the Browns for taking two mid-round quarterbacks, you should. But once they did it, what they've implemented is not unheard. I mean, it makes sense what they've done. So it has nothing to do with trying to sabotage Shador Sanders. It has nothing to do with Kevin Stefanski not liking Shador Sanders or this or that. I mean, they've told you what they thought by the draft position. It's now with, okay, what do we do next? And, you know, between them getting rid of the other quarterbacks and now Gabriel getting hurt, it's Shador Sanders' turn. We'll see what he does with it.
Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk up on ESPN Las Vegas. Well, the Raiders in Vegas is the home of being weird about this. It's always weird. And I'll tell you, this game does mean something in terms of avoiding headaches and avoiding more drama. If Shador Sanders comes in here and lights up the friggin' Raiders when fans are already frustrated, they're already mad about a lot of things. If the next one is, why didn't you take Shador? We told you. If he comes in and beats them, oh, my God, on Monday and Tuesday next week.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not going to be pretty. I mean, look, I think I've said this before, too. Like, the Raiders being as bad as they've been has been surprising to me. But I think that there's a lot that has gone into it where coaches probably aren't seeing eye to eye. They don't know that they're speaking the same language, right? Where you have a guy like Pete Carroll who has done things in a certain way for so long. And I mean, they had a lot of success in Seattle. And then you bring in somebody like Chip Kelly, who, you know, early on in his NFL coaching career had some success, and then that did not last very long. Then, you know, goes into college, ain't that successful at UCLA, is wildly successful as an offensive coordinator at Ohio State. But does what he was doing in college really translate to what the NFL game is now? It doesn't appear to be so, right? I mean, you also have a offensive coordinator and quarterback that clearly are not on the same page and are not getting things done in a manner that is suitable to the quarterback. And so that's issue number one. And, you know, the other part of issue number one is that you paid a lot of money to bring in Chip Kelly, right? And make him the offensive coordinator. And that just seems like it was a horrible, horrible mistake. And then melding Patrick Graham and Pete Carroll's systems together is not going well. I mean, and this is one of the things that I thought about with Bryce Young a couple years ago with Frank Reich, and they had Thomas Brown as their offensive coordinator, a guy who came from the Los Angeles Rams and the Sean McVay system. Those systems were not aligned. And if you don't have systems that are totally aligned and you speak the same language, it really makes it difficult to implement those things. And so I think that's part of the issue with the Raiders defense is you've got Pete Carroll, who has done things one way. You've got Patrick Graham, who's done things another way. And you're trying to meld the two together, and it's not working. So, yeah, based off of all of that, if things go poorly on Sunday for the Raiders against the Browns, and like you have somebody in Myles Garrett who's going to be across the line of scrimmage and, you know, going up against Geno Smith, he's going to have to get rid of the ball real quick because Myles Garrett's coming, man. Mm. And that, yeah, you're right, Steve. It's going to get really loud really quickly.
Myles, give me your thoughts. Joe Burrow's getting closer to returning, could even be this week. And now he's going to be without his wide receiver one in Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, well, he should be. I mean, what Ja'Marr Chase did was unacceptable. I mean, come on. And then to lie about it, when you're going to get caught in 4K, dude, like, stop. I think that's part of probably why his appeal was denied so quickly is because, like, dude, we caught you in 4K. And as ornery, let's call it, as Jalen Ramsey is, something had to have set him off for him to react in the manner that he did. And I think, as we now know what happened, his reaction was appropriate. And that's kind of what Mike Tomlin said, you know, the other day, or yesterday, I guess I should say, when he was asked, you know, did you talk to Jalen Ramsey about that? He said, no, I mean, my feeling on that is when somebody spits on you, you do what comes natural. And yeah, I kind of feel that way when somebody does that. It's one of the ultimate levels of disrespect, the ultimate signs of disrespect. So unnecessary. And, you know, Ja'Marr Chase really has gotten the better of Jalen Ramsey for most of those two, you know, going at it against one another. So I expect better from Ja'Marr Chase. I really do, especially at this point in his career. And, you know, he's a leader of that team and a leader on the offense. I think he's got to be better. He should be suspended. I'm glad he's suspended.
Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk is up on Cofield and Company right here on ESPN Las Vegas. I keep seeing, well, I've seen several people try to find an NFC team other than the Eagles. I thought the Eagles cemented at least one thing, that you will have to play defense. Otherwise, do not expect to score 28, 35 points against the Eagles. I thought these last 2 weeks were pretty good for the Eagles, but are you still kind of holding back, reserving judgment because of the offense? Because defensively the last 2 weeks, I mean, you pointed out what they did to Goff. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by that result. I mean, and I love Jared Goff. Jared Goff is one of the reasons why I have my career. But my gosh, that he has trouble playing in the cold, and he has trouble playing against Vic Fangio. And I mean, I saw it when I was covering him day to day, and we've seen it time and time again. And the problem with Goff sometimes is that he's limited in what he can do, right? I mean, it gets ornery when people talk about it, but like the hand size becomes an issue in cold weather because he starts playing with the glove. And when you're playing with the glove, you don't have as good grip on the football. And it's probably why he's more inaccurate. So all these things come together, and, you know, I don't doubt what Detroit can do. I think Detroit's still a really darn good football team, and they have some really, really talented people. But, you know, with the brain drain of Ben Johnson not being there, that makes a difference. And when you have a quarterback who is limited and doesn't necessarily do well in cold weather, that hurts you too. And so by virtue of all those things, Vic Fangio looks even more like a genius than he usually does when they go against Detroit, and Detroit really can't do much of anything all game long. And they're going for it on fourth down, and they're going for it on fourth down, and they're going for it on fourth down. And it's not working because Goff is not able to do the things he needs to do against that defense, and especially with that defensive front and how good it is. And so, I mean, to get to your question, Steve, I mean, I think that the Eagles can go all the way based on their defense, because they can shut pretty much anybody down right now, explosive or not, and they know how to make plays. And, you know, the Rams should have beaten them earlier this season for sure. And if they didn't have disastrous special teams, they would have. But I think if the Rams have to go to Philadelphia again, and it's really cold, and Matthew Stafford's not going to have the same problems as Jared Goff, but, like, it's difficult for any Southern California team, as we saw last year in the playoffs, to go up there and in the snow and in the cold and, like, whatever weather might be in January and defeat them up there. So if I'm the Eagles, I feel really good, because even though there's a lot of consternation offensively, defensively that team is elite. Defensively, they've got an elite coach, and they're going to have an advantage that way in whoever they play down, you know, the stretch of this season and into the postseason.
Miles Simmons with us. Less than a minute. I don't have to close on this one. Going back to Vegas. Man, we paid between public and what the Raiders threw in, like over $2 billion for a football stadium here. And then you retweeted a video of what that stadium in Madrid does with its grass. And while the Raiders are often playing on dirt here at Allegiant, that technology at Madrid Stadium is wild.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I just didn't know anything about that. And I guess why would I? Because I'm not, you know, I don't pay much attention to what goes on in Spain, if I'm
sure.
Being completely honest with you.
Get it together.
In Spanish sports. But yeah, I think it just shows that if NFL owners really, really, really want to do something, they could. If NFL owners really wanted to have technology so that they could provide the best playing surface possible for players, they could. I've said many times that I think that NFL owners need to just set aside $1 billion and come up with the best field turf that has ever been known to man. And I said that before I realized what's going on in Madrid. Now that I've seen that, now we all know what they need to do in domes and otherwise in order to provide the best fields for their players.
Miles, thank you. Appreciate you being flexible today. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
We'll make sure to retweet that, because it really was incredible. It's this whole tray that slides apart. It doesn't go outside. It goes under the field. There's all this lighting, and it was incredible. 2 hours on the way. We're headed towards the Josh Pastner Radio Show after 6 o'clock right here on ESPN Las Vegas.